It's 6 minutes after 9 o'clock in Northeast Texas. You're listening to North by Northeast. I'm Mark Haslett. Some 8,700,000 people remain under boil water notices in Texas this morning. Utilities around the Lone Star State are struggling to get water pressure back up to functional levels in the wake of last week's catastrophic winter storms and record cold temperatures. That 8.7 million figure is a sharp drop from the more than 12 million people who were under boil water notices on Sunday, but that's still a lot of folks, roughly comparable to the entire populations of states like Virginia or New Jersey. Across Texas this morning, 1,259 boil water notices remain in effect, according to the Texas Commission on Environmental Quality in a statement they released yesterday. Right here in Commerce, we are one of those communities. The extreme cold weather has caused chaos in Texas for more than a week. Only 285 boil water notices have been lifted so far. The state regulator requires water companies to issue a boil water notice if unsafe conditions arise, such as if water distribution pressure drops below 20 psi or if a utility's water disinfection equipment can't function properly. Of course, because of power outages and burst pipes, those conditions have plagued many Texas communities over the past week. People who are affected by a boil water notice should boil water for at least 2 minutes before it can be used. That's according to the Texas Environmental Commission. It said that boiled water should be used for everything from washing fruit to brewing coffee. So if you're sleepy in the morning, like many of us, when it's coffee making time, might want to get some coffee water ready before you go to bed so you don't have to just stare at that pot of boiling water on your oven while you're waiting for your day to start. We're joined this morning in KETR studios by Howdy Listenby. He is the Commerce City Manager, and to say that he's been busy over the past week is an understatement, and he's far from alone. Lots of folks have been working literally around the clock since this crisis unfolded. Howdy, good morning.
Thank you, Mark. Good to be here.
So let's, before we get into the specifics of what happened last week, let's kind of provide some context for folks. Not everybody can tell you off the top of their head exactly how the City of Commerce water production system works. So let's talk about the system and describe it, and then we'll get into the specifics of what's been going on since the storm hit.
Sure. I think if we're going to understand what happened to us this past week, it's helpful for us all to understand what the system should operate like on a normal day under normal conditions. And so we typically break that down into three different components: water production, water treatment, and water distribution. And so for our community water production, we get about 3/4 of our raw water from down in Lake Tewakinee. So that is a surface water source, which has its own treatment processes. We get about 1/4 of our water from groundwater, which is a well field out east of town. Groundwater is treated differently than surface water. And so we have a water treatment plant on the south end of town that treats the water that comes in from Lake Tewakinee. And then we have a treatment process on the eastern side of town for the groundwater that comes into our system. Once the water is here, throughout the entire system, there are very large pumps that have to be used to push the water. Most people realize that water doesn't flow uphill, so you have to push it uphill, and that requires a tremendous amount of electricity. Once water production team gets the raw water to us, then it enters the treatment process. When you start water treatment, you generally have about 4 stages. Stage 1 is what we call clarification. You get the raw water, you literally put it in a big bowl above the ground. You add some chemicals to it. Fancy words are coagulation and flocculation. The chemicals create an ion system in the water, and the sedimentation and the minerals begin to coagulate and clump up, and then as they flocculate, they settle down to the bottom. So at the bottom of that large bowl, there's going to be a layer of sludge. And then at the top is the cleaner water that has settled out. And so at clarification, we allow water time to just go through that clarification process. We skim the water off the top and then move it into stage two. Stage two is filtration. Most everybody's familiar with a Brita filter or a Pure filter. There's filters that you can get for your home, for your kitchen. Our filtration system is a little more complex, but it's basically a very large Brita filter. And we force water through that filter media, and the filter removes any of the remaining sedimentation. It will remove any kind of amoeba or large parasites that are existing in the water. And so filtration is simply a process where you push the water through those filters. After that, stage three is disinfection. We use a chloramine compound, which is chlorine plus ammonia, to disinfect the water. The filters will remove sediment. They'll remove large pieces that are floating in the water. They'll remove the parasites. They're not able to remove bacteria or virus. So the chloramine's disinfection of the water will kill and deactivate any bacteria that remain in the water. Then you have finished what's called potable or potable water. And then stage four is our high service pumps. It's another series of very large pumps that push the water into town. Once we've got through water treatment, then it gets into the water distribution system, which is an entire series of underground pipes, as well as some elevated water towers up in the air. Not a lot of people understand that that entire system is looped and integrated and virtually acts as a bowl. When you fill a bowl of water, because of gravity, the water starts at the bottom of the bowl and then fills to the top. And so as we push water into the distribution system, we have to fill up all of the underground water pipes throughout the entire distribution system before water starts going up in the air and getting into the water tower. We had a lot of questions asking us, well, why don't you just fill up the towers first? Hydraulically, that's not even possible because of how they're all connected. If we were able to do that, we would push 1 million gallons up into the air, then we would open the valves and it would just drain out and start filling up. So we estimate we've got about 3 million gallons underground in our extensive piping network, and we have 1 million gallons of water up in the air in the water tower. It all operates like one big bowl, and gravity forces us to fill it up from the bottom to the top. During this event, that's one of the reasons why some areas of town had limited water and other areas had no water at all. Because of how the geography and the topography of our community works, the low points in town were at the bottom of the bowl, and the high points in town were at the top of the bowl. And until we had the water filling up the entire bowl, not everybody got water. The last thing I'll say about the distribution system is that it has to provide two functions. Most everybody assumes it's drinking water, so it's domestic and commercial use for the water. That's the primary source that everybody understands for water distribution. But the second is fire protection. If we don't have a fully pressurized distribution system, we're not able to fight fires. And that presents an extremely large risk to the community. In a cold weather event, once electricity is restored, everybody gets their space heaters out. Historically speaking, electric space heaters cause fires. So the risk to our community of a home catching on fire was elevated because of the cold weather and people using electric space heaters once electricity was restored. If that house caught on fire, we did not have a water system available for firefighters to then put out that fire and save your home. So if house A catches on fire and gets fully involved and we can't stop it, that fire could spread to house B, which could then spread to house C, and you could potentially lose entire neighborhoods to fires that we can't contain. So the ability to restore system pressure is just as much about restoring fire protection as it is to let people drink water and take showers and do the other things that they need to and enjoy to do. So that's generally an overview of what a system is supposed to look like and how it's supposed to work.
Well, that's a great summary, Howdy. I certainly appreciate you outlining that for us. If you're just tuning in, this is North by Northeast. I'm Mark Haslett. Our guest this morning is Commerce City Manager Howdy Listenby. We just heard an overview of how water works in commerce. We get about 3/4 of our water from Lake Tewakinee. About 1/4 of our water system uses water from some wells that are out east of the city. And so these large pumps bring water into the system for treatment. They have to let the water settle for a little while, let all the big sediments sink to the bottom. They've got some chemicals that they add to make that process happen. After that, they filter the water that gets rid of any remaining large particles, plus amoebas, parasites, that sort of thing. Then they have to disinfect the water. That kills any bacteria, virus, microbes that made it through the filter. And then once the water is clean and ready to go, it gets pumped into the distribution system, which, as Howdy described, is one big virtual bowl, so to speak. So in other words, you've got to fill up those pipes down at the bottom underground before the water can rise up into those towers to accumulate into those towers. So that's why neighborhoods in commerce didn't all get water back at the same time, because those systems are not parallel. And so if you were in perhaps the older part of town up on Cow Hill, towering above the rest of commerce, you didn't get water as quickly as those folks down in the lower elevations. And it might not seem that commerce has that much of a disparity from one neighborhood to the next in terms of elevation, but there is, you know, there are some higher points in town than there are in others.
And one of the things that people sometimes don't understand is that maybe one side of town is low and the other side of town is low, and there's a hump in the middle. And so people think, well, we're in a low part of town, but we didn't get water. Well, we have to get the water all the way up the hill so that it can spill over that and then go down to the other low-lying areas. It was a challenge to get water around.
It definitely relies a lot on just gravity and how gravity works. It's a hydraulic system, literally. Yeah. So, of course, it's powered by a combination of water volume and weight and gravity. And the thing that was, I guess we really dodged a bullet here in commerce in that we didn't have any major fires, or were there any fires at all during this time that we were out?
We had one fire call that I'm aware of that did not require us to open up and use water, and so it was a minor call we were able to respond to and help out. It did not cause any major, and it wasn't a structure fire. So we were worried when the first call came in, but it turned out to be something we could handle.
But it could have been catastrophic.
Could have been, yes.
And really, considering how many communities around Northeast Texas and the rest of the state were without water for periods last week, we got very lucky that there wasn't a major tragedy in that regard. So now that we have some context and we understand what's going on and we understand how the water system works, let's get right back into the events of this past week. And I guess we got to go all the way back to Thursday before last, February 11th. That's when it all really started. And boy, we thought things were bad then when it was just a regular old Northeast Texas ice storm. So let's go back and kind of go along the timeline of what happened.
Sure. And one of the things I'll say up front is I don't want anyone to feel like I am attempting to make excuses. I'm not in the business of making excuses. We're in the business of finding solutions. Growing up playing basketball, I had an influential basketball coach, Coach Davis. He was a little bit more gruff than this, but I will paraphrase, and he said, excuses are like buttholes. Everyone has one and they all stink.
I've heard that one before.
And so I don't want to make excuses about what happened, but we have to talk about the brutal reality of what we faced. February 11th, the storm hits our community. The city began to shut down non-essential services. But even during those events, we still show up at the water treatment plant. We still produce water. We still put water into the system. So from February 11th to February 15th, we were operating the system just like a hot summer day. February 15th, we lose power at the water treatment plant. And that means none of our pumps work, so we can't push water. None of our treatment plant processes work because you can't move water from clarification to filtration. We just couldn't push water anywhere through the treatment plant.
And I'm sorry, Hattie, to interrupt, but just to clarify, February 15th, that was Monday last week.
Correct.
When most folks lost power early Monday morning when it was super, super cold.
We've had some conversations with Encore, water treatment plants, wastewater treatment plants, critical infrastructure like that is supposed to be on a tier of the grid that is protected, but they lost complete control of the grid everywhere, and they lost power at tier one all the way through tier everybody. We maintained system pressure from 15th through February 16th. And so on February 16th, we began to see system pressure drop as we just drained water out and used the water that was in storage. We went without power from February 15th through midnight of February 17th. So basically 2 full days, we were without power at any of our treatment processes at the south side of town. We got power back on the 17th at midnight. So we began to scramble and get the plant back to life. Morning of February 18th, I believe around 8 a.m., we started pushing water back in the town. But the plant was not back to what we would consider normal capacity. So at that time, we were putting 500,000 to 750,000 gallons into the system for that day. Normal day, we use 1 million to 1,200,000 gallons of water and just normal demands. So when we started firing back up, we weren't putting water in the system at the rate we typically use water. So on the 19th, our crews worked and increased production to about 1 million gallons. On the 20th, we were able to increase production again to about 1.6. And the 1.6 million gallons of production was a higher rate of production than we had been producing under normal circumstances before all of this hit. Our big breakthrough came on Sunday, and we were able to about 100% increase in production. We went to 2.6 million gallons of water production from all of our sources, and that's when we began to see the system fill up and pressure be restored. So by February 22nd, we had restored system pressure, and we were able to start providing water again to our rural outlying county customers as well. It was unfortunate for people in the outlying areas, but until our system is pressurized, we can't effectively push water out into their system, again, because of the bowl concept. We have to fill up our bowl of water before we can successfully push water into somebody else's bowl of water. And so we kind of had to phase in how we restored water service. As of yesterday evening, all of our rural water systems were getting water from us again. I haven't heard from them today whether they're fully pressurized or not. But water system pressure is restored. We still remain under a boil water notice.
So that's talking about folks in the North Hunt water system, as well as the other rural water providers.
We've got Malloy Water Supply Corporation. We've got Gafford Chapel Water Supply Corporation. We've got West Delta Water Supply Corporation. And then, of course, North Hunt Special Utility District.
So these rural water providers depend on the commerce system working. And it wasn't a situation where commerce was withholding water.
Correct.
It was a literal infrastructural possibility issue. It's not like y'all had the option of delivering water to those rural providers and chose not to. It was, you just simply couldn't until the system had what was up to capacity.
I will say West Delta is probably the only exception. West Delta gets their water from our groundwater well fields. And so there was a period of time where we could have sent them water, but our system wasn't pressurized. And we made the decision, I made the decision, that I had to get fire service restored to our community before we started sending water to anybody else. I put something out on social media. It may not have been clear. Contractually, we provide water for domestic and commercial purposes to these customers, but we do not, we cannot provide fire flows to those rural systems. We have an obligation to our community to provide fire protection. And as we talked about, we were at substantial risk of fires breaking out. And so we wanted to restore that as fast as possible. So there was a period of time we probably could have sent West Delta water. We chose not to for about a day so that we could get our system up and running.
Okay, well, I appreciate you clarifying that distinction between West Delta and the other providers, and I doubt that folks would take issue with that. I think everybody understands how fire protection is even more critical than having water in your kitchen or bathroom. You're listening to North by Northeast. My name's Mark Haslett, and I'm joined by Howdy Listenby. He's the city manager of Commerce, where we remain under a boil water notice. We'll talk about that a little bit later this morning. We're going to take a short break, and pretty soon we're going to open up the phones. The number here at KETR is 800-882-5387, 1-800-882-KETR. We'll be giving that number again right after this break.